You know, the problem with distractions is that they are so distracting. I'll sit down at my desk at church, and I'll start to work on a couple of things, and I'll make the mistake of opening up Outlook, which is my email program, and I'll find there an email with an attachment, and it's got a video attachment. Often these emails are from Michael O'Brien, like this one. Why You Didn't Make the Olympics. Sorry, that last one gets me every time. Anyway, those are distractions. I'll be sitting there and I'll get this desire to check the web for the latest news on the presidential race or the bailout plan. Just get distracted. Or I'll be at home and be having a great conversation with Kathy and I'll get distracted by a television show. I'm easily distracted. Anybody here easily distracted? I want to see the hand of every man here, okay? And then some women, okay, very good. Most of us probably battle with distractions, and if we could get a handle on our distractions, we'd be able to accomplish many of the goals we set out for ourselves. If a church could have success in battling distractions, that church would be able to accomplish much of its own goals and the mandates God has given it. Today in Nehemiah, we're going to look at Nehemiah chapters 4 and 6. So if you have your Bibles, take a look there. There are five different scenarios where the Jews of Nehemiah's day face a dizzying array of distractions and interferences, all of them thrown at them by the enemies, those people who oppose the work of God. And in each scene, we're going to see three of them this morning. In each scene, the Jews are opposed. In each scene, they respond. And in each scene, they respond appropriately to the particular opposition. See the first one at the very beginning of chapter 4, starting with verse 1. This is a distraction and interference by someone who is famous for his hatred of the Jews. It came about that when Sanballat heard that we were rebuilding the wall, he became furious and very angry. And he mocked the Jews. Every movement has a leader, and the leader of the movement against the Jews was Sanballat. He knew that if if Jerusalem became militarily and politically strong again, and they would if they rebuilt the walls, then his own nation of Samaria would be weakened. So he takes the opportunity when they're just really going well on the wall building to attack their hearts. And he makes fun of them. These people have been working day and night as hard as they can, building the best walls they possibly can, and now they get laughed at. You ever been laughed at? Most of us have been laughed at. You know, good-natured ribbing is one thing. Ridicule and scorn hurts. When I was a kid, my mom used to tell me on a regular basis, because she had reason to tell me this, David, remember, sticks and stones may break your bones, but words will never hurt you. And yet for me, those words didn't seem to be very true. Words meant to demoralize usually hit the mark with me. So Sanballat has five questions he asks, just one after the other. And they're all aimed at the Jews' hearts. What are these feeble Jews doing? Reminds me of that memorable scene in the movie Rocky. You know, the original, the classic. Where Rocky's there in the Coliseum and he's almost by himself. And he looks at the ring that he'll be fighting Apollo Creed the very next day. And it suddenly dawns on him, I don't have what it takes to become the heavyweight champion of the world. He wants to go the distance, but I don't have what it takes to do what I want to do here. And Sanballat wants to convince the Jews, you don't have what it takes to do what you want to do for God. Then other questions. Are they going to restore it for themselves? They're not strong enough. Can they offer sacrifices? God's not in this thing, guys. Can they finish in a day? Makes fun of how long it's taken them. Can they revive the stones from the dusty rubble, even the burned ones? Even makes fun of the building materials. He's aiming at their hearts. He's not trying to pick a fight. He's trying to take the fight out of them. It's all about demoralizing. He's got a sidekick named Tobiah. Tobiah the Ammonite was near him. He said, even what they're building, if a fox should jump on it, it would break their stone wall down. Trying to do the exact same thing Sanballat was doing. Discouraging, demoralizing, deflating. And attacks like that have to be countered. How do the people of God respond? How should they respond when there is an attack on their hearts, when there is a heart attack? If you've ever been a victim of a heart attack in this manner, you know exactly what they were facing. Maybe it was back when you were in school and a coach said, there's really no need for you to try out for the team. Message, you wouldn't make it anyway. Or a parent or a good friend won't join you in dreaming about a career move. Those kinds of comments are the kinds of comments that make us want to throw in the towel. But watch what Nehemiah does. Hear, O our God, how we are despised. Return their reproach on their own heads. Give them up for plunder in a land of captivity. Do not forgive their iniquity. Let not their sin be blotted out before you, for they have demoralized the builders. Now, if that seems like kind of a harsh prayer, it is. But think of all the things that Nehemiah might have done when he was reproached, when made fun of. He might have just made war against them, might have just taken action militarily. He might have called all the Jews together and had a pep rally and tried to be a cheerleader. Come on, power of positive thinking. But he didn't do any of that stuff. He prayed. Matter of first resort, he prayed. Now, prayer is usually not going to be the last thing that we do or the only thing we do in a time of crisis. But Nehemiah points the way here. It is the first thing we do. When a crisis hits, the first thing we do is we pray. And I happen to think that Nehemiah's strategy, his action model, is exactly what we need to see at this time in our church. It is possible that we here at Northwest Community Church might get the idea that we can't do what we want to do for God. Let's just be honest. The truth is that most churches in the United States are our size or slightly smaller. But it's so tempting to think that the real ministry, where the game really is in churches that are much larger than ours. Don't think that this is a rant from a smaller church pastor. It's really not. I genuinely thank God for the churches in San Antonio where there are multiple thousands of people coming on Sunday mornings. BRCC and Wayside Chapel, Oak Hills, Community Bible Church. These are churches of great impact. They're good for our city. But I don't think for a moment that the churches we refer to as megachurches are the only places where impact is happening. And I want Northwest Community Church to be a church of huge impact. And I want you to know that I want that. We're doing some things to increase our impact. On Saturday morning, there is a men's recovery Bible study. It started recently to help men who have hang-ups and habits and hurts that have taken the place of God in their lives. It's our hope that that study grows, expands, helps more and more men, that it expands to include women who have hurts, hang-ups, and habits that have taken the place of God in their lives. There's a group on Sundays after church that is engaged in an evangelism training course because we want to be people, we want to be a church where men and women and young people and children regularly put their trust in Jesus Christ. We support missionaries around the world at various strategic places for the exact same reason. You should know that at the last elders meeting, the elders affirmed their passionate desire to see Northwest grow in its great commission-mindedness. You should also know that I have never had a life goal to be the pastor of a so-called megachurch. It doesn't mean that I don't want to see our church have mega impact. If we're a church of hundreds, I want to see us impacting tens of thousands. We have two worship services. I long for the day when both of our worship services are full to overflowing and we have 3 and 4 worship services on a Sunday morning. And our worship center is filled with people who want to grow in Christ, who want to find out more about this Jesus because they've experienced God's touch from you. And they're here hungry. I want us to have an impact that is way out of proportion to our size. Kind of impact that everybody would look and say, wow, God must be in this. I want Northwest to be a great commission force in San Antonio. Now, quick, when I said that, I want Northwest to be a great commission force. What went through your mind? Maybe something like, Dave, come on. That kind of talk is for the megachurches. We're not big enough to have great impact. We don't have what it takes to have really effective salt and light ministries. We don't have what it takes to do what we want to do for God. And if anything like that was coursing through your brain, then you are the victim of a heart attack, just the way the Jews in Jerusalem were victims of a heart attack by Sanballat and Tobiah. That's exactly what they were saying to them. But Nehemiah and the Jews prayed, and what happened after they prayed? So we built the wall, and the whole wall was joined together to half its height, for the people had a mind, and the word is literally heart, to work. I'm willing to bet that prior to Nehemiah bursting onto the scene in Jerusalem, not a whole lot of prayer was being lifted up in Jerusalem. But the minute the people of God gave themselves to the work of God, they put themselves right square in the crosshairs of the enemy. And that's what made prayer crucial. And when you and I ramp up our efforts to live for Jesus, and when we start being all about the Great Commission, we're going to be putting ourselves right in the crosshairs of the enemy, and demoralizing thoughts will come. They will come, and they will come from the enemy. We need to be ready for it. We need to expect it. And the thing to do when those thoughts come is to pray. That's how you respond to the thought, we can't do what we want to do for God. You pray. And as of verse 6 of chapter 4, everything's going great. But it's not quite time to plan a mission accomplished party, because the enemies are about to launch the second phase of this effort to stop the work. Verse 7. Now when Sanballat, Tobiah, the Arabs, the Ammonites, the Ashdodites heard that the repair of the walls of Jerusalem went on and that the breaches began to be closed, they were very angry. And all of them conspired together to come and fight against Jerusalem and to cause a disturbance in it. This is getting more serious. This is a threat of military action. It's getting dangerous. This isn't just you don't have what it takes to do what you want to do for God. This is we're going to keep you from doing what you want to do for God. Verse 9, what did Nehemiah do? We prayed to our God. So it's kind of like over and over again, you hear the same thing, but this is different. Because up to this point in the book of Nehemiah, it's always been Nehemiah prayed, Nehemiah prayed. Now it's we prayed to our God. And everybody's getting the same vision for desperate dependence on God. They prayed. That's not all they did. And because of them, we set up a guard against them day and night. Now, that's a good idea. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, they set up a guard. And this is not a guard instead of prayer. This guard, this protection, just goes hand in glove with their trust in the Lord. But they're not in good shape. Their emotional life is really depressed. And you can tell it's depressed by the songs that are being sung. And the song, one of the songs that's being played in garage bands around the city in Jerusalem is recorded in verse 10. It's kind of a catchy little, get Michael to put this to music. The strength of the burden bearers is failing, yet there is much rubbish. And we ourselves are unable to rebuild the wall. Got a nice beat to it. So was there any more rubbish now than there was before? No, the rubbish is exactly the same. What's happened is that repeated attacks, intimidations, threats, interferences, when they go on after a period of time, have a cumulative effect, a draining effect on the people. And their spirits are in a tailspin. Just worn the workers down. They are re-demoralized. So Nehemiah stationed men in the lowest parts of the space behind the wall, the exposed places. I stationed the people and families with their swords, spears, and bow. And notice what he does. He sets them up for battle. He doesn't tell them to raise the white flag. He doesn't say, let's surrender for peace. This is getting dangerous. He prepares them for battle. Opposition to the work of God is part and parcel of serving Jesus Christ. And the message from Nehemiah is, we're going to face this opposition, but this wall is getting built. We're not backing down. You know as well as I do about the sufferings of Christians around the world today just for being believers. Some of our family, our brothers and sisters in Christ, are suffering terrible atrocities just because they follow Christ. And they fight for the privilege of continuing to live for the Lord. Now, they don't fight with swords and spears. They take up the armor of God. Ephesians 6, the sword of the Spirit, the breastplate of righteousness, the shield of faith, the helmet of salvation, the belt of truth. They take up all the armor that God provides, and they wear that armor into the fight and love people and love God. And through the centuries, God's people have heard people say in various ways, we're going to keep you from doing what you want to do for God. And they have responded. We have responded, just as they do in Jerusalem here. They pray, they remember the Lord, and they prepare. Now, you've seen maybe Braveheart, you've seen The Lord of the Rings, and you've heard some great pre-battle speeches. Listen to the words of Nehemiah. See if this doesn't match up with anything you've heard William Wallace or Aragorn say. Do not be afraid of them. Remember the Lord who is great and awesome, and fight for your brothers, your sons, your daughters, your wives, your houses. Freedom! You know? It's a great pre-battle speech. That would inspire me. If I heard that speech, I wouldn't get off the wall. I'd take up my sword in one hand and the trowel in the other, and I'd build and be prepared to fight. When our enemies heard that it was known to us and that God had frustrated their plan, then we all returned to the wall, each one to his work. It is significant when this attack happened. It happened when they were about halfway through the work, because in my experience, opposition And the first thought about quitting happens about halfway into a project. The wall was joined to half its height. Beginning stages of just about any project are invigorating. They're energizing. Whether it's a weight loss program or a get fit regimen or a stop a bad habit of effort or a new family budget, you know, at the very beginning, the first few days, you see a lot of progress. But progress inevitably slows, and pretty soon you're not losing weight as fast as you wanted to, and the money's not piling up, and the debt's not going down as quick as you wish it would. And that's when the word quit usually first comes to our minds. It's not worth it. Forget this. It can happen when we're talking about serving Jesus just as easily as it can with a weight loss program. Maybe just recently you've stepped up to the plate in some way to serve, in a Sunday school class or a care group or something else, and you've been doing this for some time now, maybe a couple of months or maybe a few weeks. You started off all loaded for bear, but you know, recently nobody's really patted you on the back. Very few strokes, not much affirmation. You're thinking, this isn't much fun anymore. And you lose sight of the fact that you started doing this to equip this next generation of four-year-olds to live for Jesus. Right in the middle. You're getting unasked for constructive criticism. Maybe because of some of the leadership you're providing. And the thought comes, I didn't sign up for this. And you're tempted to back away from the leadership position you've taken. And you've forgotten why you stepped up to the leadership position in the first place. Or maybe you're actually opposed and you're facing some real hardship. That Bible study you started at work or the one you started at school, you're getting some flack for that. Or you've been witnessing to a friend. Friend doesn't know Jesus Christ, and you want your friend to know the Lord. This has created a weirdness in your relationship with your friend, so you're thinking, maybe I should back off and not talk to him about Jesus anymore. But your friend still doesn't know Christ, so you dare not back away. And you've just recently started to try to lead your family in the things of Christ. Have a Christ-centered home. So you're getting your kids up at 4 o'clock in the morning, 5 o'clock in the morning for a Bible study and prayer time, and they're just not into it. And you just don't understand, why aren't they into it? And you wouldn't do that at 5 o'clock, but you know what I'm talking about. They're just not with you. And so you're tempted to, well, maybe I'll just kind of back away from this prayer and Bible thing with my children. But then you think, I can't. I can't back away. Because this is the stewardship God has given me. And that is exactly when we put on the whole armor of God and we say to ourselves and we say to the Lord, I am not abandoning my place on the wall. This is my place on the wall, and I'm going to keep on keeping on by God's grace. And everything's fine. The end of chapter 4, we've got the people back on the wall. The wall is resuming work, but that's not the end. The wall's not quite finished. Chapter 6. Skip on over to chapter 6 and look at the first couple of verses. When it was reported to Sanballat, Tobiah, to Geshem the Arab, and to the rest of our enemies that I had rebuilt the wall and that no breach remained in it, although at that time I had not set up the doors in the gates. That's the only thing that's left. The wall is done. It's just no gates in place. Then Sanballat and Geshem sent a message to me saying, come, let us meet together at Shepharim, in the plain of Ono, then parenthetically, but they were planning to harm me. This is derailing by distraction. And the enemies used that most insidious of tactics to keep real work from happening. A meeting. Across America, executives are hiring people to go to meetings for them so that they can get some real work done. It's a joke, sorry. But they're inviting Nehemiah to come to this meeting 27 miles northwest of Jerusalem. High-level meeting with foreign dignitaries. And Nehemiah sends them a message back. I'm doing a great work and I cannot come down. I love this. Why should the work stop while I leave it and come down to you? He traveled 800 miles from Persia to Palestine so that he could be involved in the great work of restoring Jerusalem to its former glory by rebuilding the walls. Stopping the work to go to a meeting out on the plains of Ono near Chefarim would exactly get in the way of accomplishing what he had come to Jerusalem to do in the first place. And he said, no. No is not a four-letter word. No is a great word for people who want to stay focused on the wall. No is a great word for churches that want to stay focused on the wall. The enemies were persistent. They sent messages to me four times in this manner, and I answered them the same way. No. 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 It might have sounded impressive to some people to be invited to this high-level meeting, but not to Nehemiah, because it would have gotten right in the way of why he was there in the first place. And if there is one of the opposition tactics that may be most fit for where many of us are right now, it may be this one. Distraction. I confess to you at the beginning that I am easily distractible. I took a walk this morning through our neighborhood, and we have kind of a country setting in our neighborhood, and I heard a hawk. And I take a walk in the mornings through the neighborhood so I can pray, and I heard the hawk, and all I'm thinking about is the hawk. And then I walked a little farther, and I heard, it's deer. I think, wow, where's the deer? And then I started walking up a hill, and I saw something about 150 yards away cross the street. And it was about the size of a Labrador Retriever, but it didn't walk like a dog. And I'm thinking, wow, what is it? There's a mountain lion around here. And I'm not getting a whole lot of praying done. And then I see a fox a little bit later. The wildlife was really out this morning. Very easily distractible. What is your great work to which you could say to any distraction, I'm doing a great work and I can't come down? No. Is your great work your family? We're going to have a Christ-centered home. Home where Jesus is Lord. Get this great opportunity. It's going to take a few hours a week. No. I can't do that and this. I'm doing a great work. I cannot come down. Just agreed to teach a class. It's going to take preparation time. And right as you're sitting down to do your preparation work, that wonderful reality TV show comes on that you so enjoy. And you say, no, I'm doing a great work. I can't come down. It's time to start a revolution. Right now, of people like you and me who are willing to put our hands to the good work, say no to the distractions, pray and protect when it comes to intimidations, when there are people or thoughts that come to our mind, you can't do what you want to do for God, you don't have what it takes, to pray like crazy and commend ourselves to God. This is the day to stand against those demoralizing thoughts that are straight from the hater of your soul. This is the day to stand against the intimidations and be ready to fight to keep on serving Jesus. And this is the day to say no to those distractions that are getting in the way of your great work for Jesus. I'd like to pray for all of us as we consider what is the great work to which God has called us, and then to consider all the no's that we will say, so that we can accomplish that great work. Would you stand with me as we